Fine Saturday with
quiet, please, ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and I've got a good one for you. We've been telling you for a long, long time that becoming a sanctuary state is going to get people killed. And over the years, I've told you about incident after incident where American citizens have been killed because of illegal aliens. Well, guess what? Washington State gave a commercial driver's license to an illegal alien who was not entitled to have that license, who then caused an accident about 3,000 miles away and about 2 months ago in the state of Florida. That accident, that really wasn't an accident. You could predict what was going to happen. He tried to do a U-turn with a long-haul truck in the middle of a freeway. Now, there are cut-throughs between one side of the freeway and the other in places like Florida on the turnpike. But when you're in the middle of that, if it's late at night and there's not much traffic, it's still illegal, but you can get away with it. Why? Because it leaves a whole bunch of that truck sticking out on both sides of the highway. So you've got approaching traffic that may hit it one way, may hit it the other way, may hit it both ways. And this guy, an illegal alien named Harjinder Singh, made an unlawful U-turn. Six people died. Sorry, let me correct that. Three people died. Three people died because of that, this horrific crash that happened. And now Washington State is trying to figure out, what do we do to fix this problem? My suggestion would be stop giving illegal aliens licenses, number one. Oregon does the same. They give driver's licenses to illegals, mostly because the Democrats want all of those illegals signed up and registered to vote. Now, that's not legal either. But don't let legal get in the way of Democrats. They've never had a problem with illegal. Let me get into more details of that. But first, welcome to Conspiracy Theory Thursday on the Radio Northwest Network. If you want to join the best conversation and talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. If you happen to be a naysayer, we love naysayers on this program. We'll put you right to the head of the list, and you can do that. I also get emails that are naysayers, too. Email talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you want to vote in our daily poll, we call it the X poll, and here's today's question. If China threatens the rest of the world by cutting off rare earths, and they have done that, should the rest of the world cut its economic ties to the Chi-Coms? Well, the U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent says, make no mistake, this is China versus the world. They have put unacceptable export controls or limits on the entire world. And because of that, if China says to the rest of the world, if you want those rare earths that we supply 90% of, you will dance to our tune. The United States is saying, if you want to do that, China, we can decouple from China right now. The Treasury Secretary says that Beijing's rare earth export curbs are testing the world's tolerance, and he's suggesting it won't be just the United States cutting off China. It may be the rest of the modern world. And consider what those rare earths do. If you haven't heard the term before, every electronic device you have, your smartphone, probably your automobile, many of the appliances in your home, maybe the equipment you use at work, whether it's an excavator or a laptop or desktop computer, it runs on those rare earths. Now, America has those rare earths, except we won't process them here because the environmentalists absolutely went to war against the idea of America providing its own rare earths. And be aware that on social media, the Chi-Coms are going to wage war on the United States. They're going to use social media, our own social media, even with TikTok being largely disconnected from the Chi-Coms. TikTok, X, Meta, Facebook, all of those, they are going to be used to try to persuade Americans, don't cut off China. Well, the fact is, I think that America ought to develop its own rare earths and its own processing so we can be independent of China. And if that means a smartphone has to cost $10 or $20 more, so be it. But let's not be tied to the Chinese communists. Anyway, you can find the X-Poll at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Yesterday's question, is Oregon Governor Tina Kotek deliberately delaying her signature on her big tax hike to deny voters the chance to decide? That's exactly what she's doing. And frankly, the rest of the legacy media, whether that's the NBC, ABC, CBS, PBS, Fox News, ought to be down there banging on Tina Kotek's office door and say to her, Governor, how dare you deny the voters the chance to put this on the ballot and vote on it? If they vote it down, that's what democracy is. In fact, even though we have a representative form of government, we have a legislature that allegedly represents the public. We have a Congress that allegedly represents all Americans. Tina Kotek and the rest of her Democrat Party friends, they love to run around and declare that they're trying to save democracy from the evil orange man, Donald Trump. Fact is, she doesn't believe in democracy. If she did, she would say the Constitution of the state of Oregon allows voters the chance to go out and gather the signatures, put it on the ballot, and vote it up or down, no matter how they choose. Fact is, she doesn't want to vote. Tina Kotek does not believe in democracy. And there's the question that any reporter worth his or her salt could ask Tina Kotek. Governor, you say you believe in democracy. Yes, I do. Well, then why won't you let people vote on the big tax hike? Is it because you fear that you've just done something opposed by the majority of people in your state? She knows that's the case because before the legislature passed this ridiculous new tax, they took public testimony. And what happened? About 4,000 people showed up and 92% of them said, absolutely, positively not. We will not do this. Now, she knows the public opposes this. She knows that a vote would kill this tax hike. She doesn't want to allow democracy. And if that is an indictment of Tina Kotek, I don't know what is. But let me get back to Harjinder Singh. So July 15th, Washington State issued Singh, and that was July 15th of 2023, a full-term commercial driver's license. Now, did Singh have a legal right to get it? Well, here's what the Transportation Secretary, Sean Duffy, says. Washington State improperly issued the driver a full-term CDL. Asylum seekers or illegal aliens are not allowed to receive this. And as a result, people died. Now, should Washington State address that problem immediately? I would suggest that Bob Ferguson, if he was any kind of governor, even though he's a Democrat, he has that deficit or disability, as Ketanji Brown Jackson might describe it, he should call up the state police. He should call the Department of Licensing and say, you are not to issue one more CDL to anybody who is illegally in this country. Well, already members of Congress, not the Democrats, but the Republicans, are introducing language in federal statutes to strengthen those rules. But the fact is, Washington State already violated federal law by giving this killer this license, and people are dead as a result of it. If that doesn't outrage you, I'd love to take your naysayer call. It's a Thursday. We call them Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Your calls are welcome at 866-439-5277. The Northwest Nonsense is coming up next on the Lars Larson Show.
Truth be told, Lars has welcomed naysayers for 27 years, but occasionally...
Who is this person who speaks to me as though I needed his advice?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense, a lot of nonsense.
Right, you're bloody well right, you know you got a right to say... sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead, fish wrapper, or mainstream media bias.
I guess you could just call this empty classrooms for empty heads. Try to wrap your head around the fact that government-run K through 12 schools fail students so badly, yet they plan gigantic new buildings with thousands of empty desks. If you judge the use of your education tax dollars based on beautiful architecture, I guess Portland Public Schools is a winner. For instance, Benson High School's renovation built a school with room for 1,700 kids. Benson only has 900 students, and projections say that number is going down in the future, not up. The next three high schools up for a rebuild come in at $500 million each, making them among the most expensive high schools anywhere in America. Some bizarre notion of equity at Portland Public Schools insists that all schools get enough room for 1,700 kids, even Jefferson, which has about 400 students right now. Voters approved the taxes to pay for it. The school board signed off on it. Construction companies and the unionized workers that work for them, they love it. And yet the kids can't use it. Under Oregon law, schools hand out diplomas even when half the students walk out the schoolhouse door at the end of 12 years not knowing how to read, write, or do math. In the next 4 years, Portland schools expect to create 3,000 brand new, empty, unused desks in brand new classrooms. But ain't those school buildings pretty? Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And naysayers, you always go head of the line. So if somebody out there thinks, no, that $1.5 billion that voters just approved for new school buildings, so we'll build gigantic empty buildings, the kids aren't learning anything more. They're probably learning less. How many students you're going to have is going to go down as well. But we have these big, beautiful architectural marvels. It's wonderful. Our question of the day, brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery, and get better fast. Multnomah Medical Clinic. This one comes in. I'll leave the name off. Lars, I'm curious, how did low-level politicians like the city of Portland mayor and city council get the impression they can tell the federal government what to do? Last time I checked, if I harbored a fugitive, I'd be arrested, and if found guilty, prosecuted. Why does government get special treatment? Why can't these sanctuary cities, which are illegal, why can't the leaders be arrested and charged as such? I've about had it with all the Democrat, illegal, alien-loving, anti-American, so-called leaders overstepping their boundaries nonsense. I don't know how much more I can take. And my favorite post on X today from the Wall Street Apes, that's the internet handle, the X handle, investigation finds Oregon Democrats have allocated $15 million of taxpayer money for lawyers for illegals, then another $15 million for down payment assistance on homes for non-citizens. That's what the Democrats did. There is no check and balance. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
I want to give the Daily Grill today to the ABC television affiliate in Portland. That's K2 News. Its Seattle sister station is Como, and they're just as bad. But I saw a story they ran on what they called a controversial conservative club at a local high school. In other words, some high school age conservatives, God bless them, decided to get together and form a club to represent their conservative point of view. And boy, did K2 News go after them. They called them controversial. Not that they pointed out anything they had done. It's controversy. They just decided if they're conservative, they are controversial. And my reaction, left-wing activists in public schools, including both the teachers and a lot of the students, have used the schools for decades, pushing pro-abortion, LGBTQ, climate nonsense, pro-Palestinian, anti-cop causes for the last couple of decades. And I've never once heard a TV station describe those outfits or those activists as controversial. But if one group of conservative students decides to organize, then legacy media like K2 News decides it's scandalous and even dangerous and divisive. And actually, their story said just that. Why it's dangerous to have conservatives in a public school. Don't you know? If you're a high school student, you're only allowed to be liberal. If you're a conservative, you are literally, as the story says, dangerous. I'd love to talk to the reporter who did that story. I suspect he won't want to talk about it. Today's best email, but you can always send more, is brought to you by Cap Concrete Coatings. Turn your garage, patio, or driveway from ugly and rough to beautiful and tough. They've done it for me. I hired Cap Concrete Coatings. Check them out at capconcretecoatings.com or call 855-CAP-DAT. Hans Wittig writes in, Lars, over the years, I've watched the radicals who've been firm in their ideology. It's amazing to see how fervent they are in their beliefs. Be it Hamas, Antifa, BLM, and all the others, they are so proud of their stance that these brave and virtuous people have to hide their faces behind masks. If they are so right in their beliefs, why hide their faces? They can hide their faces now, but when their final day on earth comes, they'll be wearing a lot less than a mask. May God bless you and your work. Signed, Hans Wittig. Hans, thanks very much for that. Glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. If you want a great conspiracy theory, there's a story that really got under my skin, and it has to do with solar panels for the Pacific Northwest. Now, I realize that just saying solar panel in a notoriously cloudy, rainy region of the country seems kind of foolish to begin with. But now the state of Washington is suing the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and why? Because they ended a program to provide solar panels for low-income and disadvantaged households. But then I looked, the reporter on this, Amanda Zhu, at the Seattle Times Daily Dead Fish Wrapper, Ms. Zhu either didn't bother to do the math or didn't think about it. But she writes about a program created in 2022. And the program, with federal money from the Inflation Reduction Act 3 years ago, $156 million. Now, what struck me about this is in the story, she explains that this $156 million program is going to benefit 900,000 households in the state of Washington. Now, I'm a simple guy, so I like to do the math simply. I thought, well, 900,000, that's close to a million. Why don't I divide $1 million or million households into $156 million? So they're going to spend about $150 per household. Now, that's what Amanda Zhu wrote in the Seattle Times. I thought, how much solar can you get for $150? Then if you actually do the math, $156 million divided by 900,000, it actually works out to $173. Again, you can't buy much solar. But what does Ms. Zhu say? She just parrots what the, you know, the environmentalists and the liberals say. It's going to save $350 million in electricity costs every year. So in other words, they're going to spend $170 per household on 900,000 households to give them access to solar, and that's going to save twice as much money. I think Ms. Zhu ought to be sent back to school. Maybe she graduated from an Oregon high school and doesn't know how to do simple math, but she is the climate and environment reporter at the Seattle Times Daily Dead Fish Wrapper, and she ought to be ashamed of that story. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
New plan of action. Just mug all the Dems.
I got jumped like 5 weeks ago walking home in New York City. And when I woke up, I genuinely felt like a different person. Because I was on the floor, I was bleeding, I was concussed, and I was 100% Republican.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Pleasure to be with you. Always glad to get your calls, and we'll do that in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. Naysayers always go to the head of the line. You want to email talk@LarsLarson.com. You can answer our X poll. The X poll is found at Lars Larson Show on X, also on our website. But because we are a conservative show, you only get to vote once. Only on Democrat shows can you vote twice. It's a real pleasure to welcome back to the program Representative Stephanie McClintock, who serves as the Minority Caucus Vice Chair in the Washington State House of Representatives. Representative McClintock, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me, Lars.
So not so long ago, we talked about a youth sports coach who was discovered to be a registered sex offender. And a lot of us wondered, how in the world was that allowed to happen? And why do we have to pass a law to straighten it out? I mean, I'm not against passing a law, but it just makes me wonder, were people not using common sense when they said, yeah, we don't need background checks for people who are going to have close contact with small children?
Yeah, pretty scary and disturbing. This is a constituent and also in my district, and a coach and a dad that brought this to my attention and my seatmates' attention. And for some reason, I'm shocked that we aren't doing this. I'm a former soccer coach from about 20 years ago, my two sons, and have been plugged into our local Little League. And I don't actually ever recall this coming up. It's been a number of years. So I could be foggy, but I have reached out to several, a soccer organization, a Little League, and CCYF sent them emails asking about what their procedure is, because we don't necessarily always need a state law, as you mentioned, to fix things. But we do need to know if these organizations are doing this on their own as their own policy, as running their organization, because it's definitely needed.
Are they, do you think perhaps they weren't doing it because of either A, cost, or B, potential embarrassment? But frankly, anybody with a clean record would not mind a background check, and anybody with a dirty record shouldn't be near the kids.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know there is cost. I work for a private sector employer, and we do background checks on all of our employees. There is a cost involved. It is not, it's not extensive. And if somebody wants to coach then and be part of an organization, they should be willing to pay for their own background check to make sure that our kids stay safe, because that is ultimately what's most important. We cannot have our kids being coached one-on-one time and grooming that goes on in these types of settings when we have someone that is there for ulterior motives other than to support these kids in learning a sport.
By the way, Representative McClintock, I've always gone by the rule that says it's always easy as long as you don't have to do it. You know, when somebody says, hey, Lars, why don't you do this? It'll be easy. Yeah, anything that you assign to somebody else. But let me ask you this. In the state of Washington, you have to have literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of quick background checks that are done by police all the time. They pull somebody over. They run them for wants and warrants. They find out some background on them. Is it possible to get some of the state bureaucracy perhaps to help out these youth sports organizations to cut the cost down? Because I would think if they were run through a background check, the same kind of background check that every officer gets when he calls dispatch and says, run this name and number and DOB for wants and warrants and for convictions, that sort of thing. Is there any way to make it easier still?
Well, I mean, we could try that. A bill was attempted last session, HB 1803. It did not come out of committee, and the focus is not specifically on background checks for coaches. There's a lot of other things going on in that bill, which I think when you muddy the waters, you lose the message. So that's why my seatmate, Representative Lee, and I are looking at something a little more specific for next session. But yeah, to your point, the cost would diminish or be significantly less if we could use WSP, Washington State Patrol. But I can tell you that they are overwhelmed. They're swamped. Their time frame is quite extensive. Obviously, when you've got patrol officers or Washington State Patrol pulling someone over, they get access to that right away. They don't have to submit a form and wait to hear back on this background check. So there's got to be a way that we can do this. This is done by employers. This is done by schools. They have to do that. So, there's some other organizations like Safe Sport that do that in the equestrian world. I've learned as I'm kind of diving into this, this issue was brought up to me like less than 2 weeks ago. So still doing some research on this. I'm waiting to hear back on a few youth sports organizations in our area, Little Leagues, soccer clubs, and CCYF, just to hear, like, what is your procedure? Are you attempting to do this? Is this something that slipped through the cracks? And if it is, how can we keep that from happening again? But, more research to be done, and we'll be working with Mr. Thomas, who brought this forward to us, and trying to get a resolution to this, because this isn't okay. I'm a mom too, and this is deeply disturbing.
Well, I'm a granddad, and I don't want my granddaughter Payson to get anywhere near these perverts and freaks. And frankly, I think that just having a procedure in place might actually scare a number of them off. I mean, I've talked to enough prosecutors about the fact that the groomers out there want to put themselves in a position where they can get access to children. If you put a shot across the bow and say, if you do that, you're going to be found out, and maybe even, this would be a separate bill, but maybe even say, if you attempt to put yourself in a position when you know well that you're not supposed to be anywhere near kids, maybe there should be some consequences for that as well. The same way there are consequences if a felon tries to buy a gun. You say you're not allowed to do that. And if you try to do it, it's not just we're going to deny you, but there will be a consequence as well. I want to see consequences for the people who attempt to get themselves in a grooming position.
Yeah, that's a great point, Lars. I'll keep that in mind when we're putting together a bill.
So if you get this bill together and keep it very, very simple for the simple-minded, do you think you can get your Democrat colleagues to sign on?
Gosh, Lars, you would think so. I mean, common sense. We want to keep our kids safe, and Democrats have kids too, and they shouldn't want them around pedophiles either. But I mean, I have a permanent bruise on my forehead from banging it against the wall of thinking that, you know, a lot of what we talk about in the Republican caucus is just common sense, and the other side just doesn't see it. They don't want it. Doesn't fit their ideology, and they just poo-poo it. And either that, or I give it to a Democrat to run. Bills are a little more, you know, have a higher chance of being passed when a Democrat sponsors the bill. So, you know, those are options. I think this is a good bill. I'd be willing to give it to a Democrat to run because I think it's important for our kids and our state.
I'll tell you what, I'll make you this promise. If some Democrat sits on this thing to keep it inside committee and from getting out of committee, you tell us their name. We'll get our audience to light up their phones legitimately and lawfully, but just simply to say, get that bill out of committee or you're going to be hearing from us every single day. That is Representative Stephanie McClintock. She is a Republican. She's the Minority Caucus Vice Chair in the Washington State House of Representatives. Her bill would ban sex offenders from coaching youth sports. I know, common sense, but hey, not so common anymore. I'll be back in just a moment, and then I'll be glad to get your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we're always glad to put naysayers to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. You can send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. You can also answer our X poll today. The X poll question can be found every day at Lars Larson Show on X and at LarsLarson.com. But because we're a conservative show, we encourage you to vote just once, not twice. So glad to get your phone calls and emails. You can stream this program. You can download it. You can podcast it. And, of course, you can always tell Alexa.
Lars has a face for radio?
He's hideous!
Wanna see? Follow him on Instagram at the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's the Radio Northwest Network, live around the Pacific Northwest on, 22 stations in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, providing honestly provocative talk for the Pacific Northwest. And this segment of the show is brought to you by 540training.com, concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense. Find them online at 540training.com. Now, we just finished talking to a member of the legislature in the minority, a Republican, Stephanie McClintock, about whether or not we need to have a law that tells youth sports groups of one kind or another that they have to do some kind of background check on the coaches. A few weeks ago, we told you about one coach who was discovered to be a registered sex offender. And if you say, how can that happen? Because nobody bothered to check. Let's go to Richard. Hey, Richard, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call, Lars. I just wanted to make a comment on that. Down here in Coos Bay at our local community college, they saw fit to hire a convicted sex offender, knowing he was, and put him in charge of the GED program, where he does have access to minors.
Why did they give a public explanation as to why they would make such a decision?
No, they've tried to hide it. I myself and two other people down here ran for the school board for the community college here last spring.
Yeah.
We were defeated, but that was one of the things we brought up. And they actually moved him from the GED program the day before the election and have since put him back in charge of it.
Okay, but when they did that, did they say, we have put this person on staff, we know his background, and we're hiring him anyway? Did they offer that explanation? Is that how you ended up knowing about it?
Basically, yes. And the current chair of the school board out there just says he's a guy that made a mistake.
No, and if you commit sexual crimes against children, that is not a mistake. That is a decision. And that kind of bad decision does not seem like it bodes well for somebody who has contact with kids. And I think as disgusting as it is to mention it, my friend Josh Markey, the former DA, for years he and I have talked about the fact that people seem to think that sex offenders just inadvertently run into kids. People who are attracted to children put themselves in those positions deliberately. They become coaches. They get themselves to a position where they can have access to children because this is what they are compelled in. It's a sick, disgusting compulsion, but there it is. So if you decide, I'm a sex offender, I'm going to go find out if I can be a youth sports coach, I'm going to see if I can be a gymnastics coach or a swim coach or something like that, those are the places that those people are attracted to, and they have to be locked out. And when we tell people by saying, well, they just found out this guy is a convicted sex offender, a registered sex offender, and nobody knew it, it's telling every one of the perverts out there they're not checking, which gives them an open doorway. On the other hand, if you said everybody who wants to be a coach or have any kind of contact with the kids has to go through a background check, I can't tell you how many emails I've been getting just in the last hour from people saying, if I wanted to be a coach, I went in and paid for my own background check. I'm anxious to show that I'm clean and that, you know, there's no reason to have a problem with that. So I think that's what you need to do is send the message. If you try to, and I even, the suggestion I made to Ms. McClintock is a serious one. And that is, if a felon walks into a gun store and attempts to buy a gun, even though he knows he has a felony, and then he does not buy the gun, that's not good enough. There is a separate crime attempting to purchase a firearm. And you should be, you know, there should be a consequence for that. It should scare people away to say, if I'm a felon and I try to buy a gun, that's a crime all by itself. Just like trying to do attempted murder is where you tried to murder somebody. And it's not like we say, well, if you tried to murder somebody, but you didn't actually murder them, that there's no consequence. Attempted murder has a consequence. So if you're a pedophile and you try to become a coach, should there be some kind of consequence? Doesn't have to be gigantic, but there should be some consequence. If you say, try to do that, and you know you're a convicted sex offender, and you attempt to do it. Now, if you say, gee, I had no idea there was some, you know, paperwork mess up, and it's in my record, but I really thought it had been cleared, then that's another matter. But I think there ought to be a consequence so that we scare the pedophiles away from even trying to get in those positions. What do you think?
I agree.
Okay.
I don't think people can be helped.
No, I think that, no, they can't. And Richard, I'll tell you that I'm not an expert, but when I've had people on who work with convicted sex offenders and they're in the psychology or psychiatry field, and I've said to them, is there any way to cure a person of this pedophilia? And they've told me the best they can do is control, meaning you can get somebody to somewhat control their appetites, if you will, their sick appetites. And that's about the best you're going to get. Just like somebody who's an alcoholic is going to tell people if they know themselves well. They're going to say, yep, I'm an alcoholic. I always will be one. I'll always be tempted, but I've found ways to control those temptations. That's the best you can get. In that case, if you can't cure it, then keep them away from the kids. Richard, thanks for the call. Back in a moment. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
15 seconds with you on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and I've got one to launch at you. Before we talk specifically with a man who knows one of the Northwest problems very, very well, I want to ask you if you, too, have had the same impression I've had, and that is whatever it is that's bad for the Pacific Northwest, that is what the elected liberal officials who run both Oregon and Washington, that's what they advocate for, the things that do the most damage. So, for example, if drugs are bad, the folks in charge say, let's legalize drugs and see what happens. If energy is something we all need, they say, let's tear down some dams. Let's wipe out some coal-fired electric plants without any clear replacement. We're in favor of that. And then when it comes to illegal aliens, they say, oh, let's give them housing. Let's give them driver's licenses. Let's give them free medical care. Yeah, we're in favor of that because illegal aliens benefit the Northwest so much. And then when it comes to the homeless, they say, we're going to demand that tax-paying citizens who work hard for their paychecks give up hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, to fund the so-called homeless because that's good for the Northwest. Can you point to anything that the Democrats in charge have been advocating for that's actually good for the average person? Because I don't see it. They seem to spend full time advocating for all the things that are bad for the Northwest, and that doesn't make sense to me. Kevin Dahlgren is an independent journalist who covers, in particular, homelessness, addiction, and the homeless industrial complex. Kevin, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Lars.
So what is this? Let's talk about homeless in particular and addiction. What are the actions that could be taken right now that are well within the resources and the legal capability of those in charge that would address this problem and start to correct it right now? It's available to them, is it not?
It is, but there's no assertive effort to actually help anybody. There's limited outreach. There's no expectations of change whatsoever. It's more of like, we're just going to continue to enable you to the point of dependency and treat you like the victim. And most homeless I know actually said, well, we'd rather be empowered and help us reach our fullest potential. They just need guidance. They don't know really how to do that, and they're not getting it. And of course, you keeping them down, there's money in it. Right. And yep. That's kind of what the homeless industrial complex has been doing for a good, decades. But certainly, as you know, in Oregon, especially Portland, the last 10 years, it's become this multi-billion dollar industry.
And by the way, you're not exaggerating when you say multi-billion, because what was last year, the Portland Metro spent $750 million. The Seattle Puget Correct. Sound area was well over $1 billion. So we're talking about a couple of billion if you just look at the two biggest metro areas in the region, right?
Yeah. Seriously, where's the money going? Here's a scary statistic. I've interviewed way over 50% of the entire homeless population of Portland, and about 90% have told me they have never been approached by an outreach worker. They have never been offered a permanent solution. So my question has to be, where is the money going? Because with all this money we're spending, I'm sorry, where the heck is it? Because it's certainly not going to the very people they say they're helping. And that's
well, on the other hand, Kevin, is it possible to imagine? I mean, since it's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, let's entertain a crazy conspiracy theory. And that is, the powers that be in Oregon have certain causes that they need people to be the foot soldiers for, whether it's the anti-ICE cause, the pro-illegal alien cause, the pro-whatever cause. And if we feed a bunch of money into NGOs where the money becomes invisible, as long as it's in a public agency, you or me or anybody else can walk in and say, I want to see the budget. I want to see what you took in. I want to see where you spent it. You're allowed to do that. The minute it goes across the street to a non-governmental organization, access to their books is zero, isn't it?
It is. And by the way, definitely not a conspiracy. This is actually happening. And I believe the homeless are being used as pawns, mostly, well, completely by radicalized progressives that are using homelessness to show that capitalism creates all problems in the world. Homelessness, addiction, crime, everything can be explained by capitalism. So they're just simply using the homeless to try to prove a point, because their number one goal is really just kind of like socialism, right? And they need to keep these people down, because anytime we actually start making a measurable difference, that they have a problem with that, because the last thing they want in the world is to end homelessness, because that would completely ruin their long-term plan to eradicate capitalism, I guess, which I'm not sure how they're going to do that, but that's kind of what I believe their plan is. I mean, and that's pretty obvious considering who's actually working for these nonprofits. You know, a high 90% already are like radicalized progressives.
Well,
you know,
and
this
and
is
think,
what they believe.
Think about where it goes, Kevin, because we've had this big debate that Congress is literally holding, the Democrats in Congress are holding the federal government hostage, saying we won't allow a budget to let the government operate till you give us money to fund health insurance for illegal aliens. And I think most working Americans would say, why are we paying the health insurance for people who aren't even supposed to be here? And you say, because that's one step in that direction. You get the poor covered by government health care. You get the elderly covered by government health care, Medicare. You get and then you cover the illegal aliens. And now all of a sudden you have a giant constituency. And anybody who threatens that arrangement says, hey, we ought to make people work before they can get Medicaid. They say, no, no, no. And if you advocate for that, they have this whole army of foot soldiers who vote and who will make noise and say, don't you dare take that stuff away once it's given.
Yeah, it's big business. I mean, look, literally on the front page of the Portland, Oregon government website, it says in large letters, Portland is a sanctuary city. Like, they are not shy about it. They are saying this is who we are, right? And they want it to be sanctuary city because there's big, big money in it. And what they pretend is that it's all about compassion, but really it's not about compassion, is it's big business. And you can't overlook the irony that anti-capitalists are hell-bent on making as much money as possible.
Well, and by the way, Kevin, on the housing part of this, you had Housing First pushed by Obama. It didn't work. And then on the Portland City Council, these 12 knuckleheads who can't make a decision to save their lives. Do you remember when they went to Vienna, Austria this year? And everybody said, why are they going there? Yeah. And they focused on, oh, they're going on a fancy vacation. What they should have focused on is this. 5 to 8% of American housing is public housing. And most people know, you say the phrase public housing, you say, oh, a place rife with crime and drugs and violence and run down and terrible, right? Vienna, Austria is 60% public housing, government-owned housing. And you say 60%, 10 times as much as here? Yep. And I think that's where those members of the city council, they didn't pick Vienna by accident. They picked a place where already two-thirds of the population lives in public housing. And because it's a notoriously expensive place to live, it's a very high-end place, you say, where do the other 40% live? Well, they're the rich folks. They live in very nice housing that they own. They would never live in government housing. But they've got to have somebody to drive their car and, you know, take care of their kids and cook their food and serve their meals. So those people live in government housing. In other words, it's socialism, and we're driving right that direction. Kevin Dahlgren is an independent journalist. Check him out on social media. Homelessness, addiction, and the homeless industrial complex. Coming up next, the victims of Jeffrey Epstein and the major banks of America.
Sometimes the truth is awkward.
You know what the Muslims call the Jews in the Quran? The children of Israel. Well, this is awkward.
Now, more truth
from Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Yes, I'd like to know who's in the Jeffrey Epstein client list. Now, we were led to believe for years and years that such a client list existed. And in fact, it wouldn't surprise me one little bit if there was such a client list, although so many years have gone by since Jeffrey Epstein's first conviction for sex trafficking of young girls. And then, of course, his death while in custody as he was facing the next bunch of accusations that were likely to send him to prison for a good long time. But now something new is being tried. The victims of Jeffrey Epstein are now suing some major banks in America, claiming that those banks simply ignored all the red flags. Should financial institutions be held accountable for enabling one of the worst sex criminals in recent history? Glad to be with you. I'll get into the details of that in just a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every single day at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, why, we put you right to the head of the list. I love naysayers, especially if they can come up with a good counter argument to whatever it is that I'm saying that got their goat. So if you're a naysayer, dial 866-439-5277. You can send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com, and you can find our daily poll. You'll find it on the X poll at Lars Larson Show on X. You can also find it on my website at LarsLarson.com. So what about Jeffrey Epstein? Just to give you a little refresher, was he a friend of Donald Trump? I'll just get that one out of the way right up front. Yeah, they were friends from the mid-1990s until about 2004. And their friendship had ended by the time that Jeffrey Epstein was caught the first time. And for reasons none of us really understand. I've talked to so many people who've been covering this story for a long, long time and said, how is it that they had a locked, tight case against Jeffrey Epstein for hiring underage girls for sex? I mean, these were girls in middle school and high school. And then the whole case largely went away. He pleaded out to a relatively minor charge and got a little bit of house arrest. And that was about it. That was in 2008. And that was well after the time when his association with Donald Trump had ended. The two guys were buddies before then, I guess. They were actually competitors to try and buy the same fancy house in Florida. But I know there are people who want to condemn Donald Trump. Let me tell you one of the best ways to test that idea, that if there was some kind of, you know, lascivious connection between the sex offender, Jeffrey Epstein, and Donald Trump, if the Democrats had had that information over the last 10 years, from the point where Trump announced he would run for president the first time to present day, in those last 10 years, you're going to tell me the Democrats knew all about this and had all this juicy dirt on Donald Trump, but didn't use it, and that they were forced to go out and make up fake stories like the Russia collusion hoax and things like that? No, I don't buy that at all. But then Epstein gets convicted the first time. He pleads out in 2008, and then he is later taken into custody about a half a dozen years ago. He's sitting in custody waiting for his trial. And then he just mysteriously takes his own life, even though by all accounts, his attorneys and everybody else, they don't believe he killed himself, and yet he dies in custody. Very strange. But what's happening now? Well, the many, many victims of Jeffrey Epstein have now sued the Bank of America and the Bank of New York Mellon, M-E-L-L-O-N, alleging the banks cared about one thing, profit, and they showed absolute loyalty to Epstein. This is all coming from the New York Daily News, but we've been covering this issue for some time. The lawsuit filed by the victims of Jeffrey Epstein says the banks, quote, knowingly provided financial support and the veneer of institutional legitimacy for Epstein and his co-conspirators to fuel their international sex trafficking organization under the guise of non-criminal business activities. Now, how do we know that's true? Well, the lawsuit goes on. Both of the banks had filed what are known as suspicious activity reports, SARs. Now, how do you generate one of those suspicious activity reports? It's actually not that difficult at all. If you went to your bank tomorrow and you made a deposit more than $10,000, it would likely generate one SAR. Now, if you have a business that does a lot of cash business, laundromat, car wash, things like that, you might well get away with it. if you did a regular series of suspicious activities, big deposits, big transactions, depending on where they're going, you're going to draw the attention of the federal government. Bank of America covered $170 million in transactions with a guy named Leon Black, and Bank of New York Mellon had flagged $378 million in payments to trafficked women. But allegedly, they were a little bit slow in alerting law enforcement, according to the lawsuit. Similar claims have already been made against J.P. Morgan Chase and Deutsche Bank, which settled with the victims without admitting any wrongdoing, which is pretty common when it comes to settling lawsuits. Both sides say nobody has to admit to any wrongdoing. You pay some money and the case goes away. The lawyers say the cases aim to hold the financial institutions accountable for facilitating Epstein's crimes and ensuring victims receive justice. You know what I'd like to know? I don't want to see just the resolution of this lawsuit and the victims paid. I want to see the banks have to answer. If you become aware that one of your clients of the bank is engaging in transactions, whether it's transactions involving sex trafficking, whether it's transactions involving drugs, whether it's transactions involving military hardware and weapons, I think the banks have a responsibility. That is one of the things they have to do. And if they're not doing it, and if they don't have systems built in to identify when there are, you know, questionable payments being made or deposits being made, then the bank has a problem, and I would like to see that problem addressed. In any case, glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. You can answer our X poll. Find the question every day. It's from the news of the day at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Let me go. Let's go first to Dale. Hey, Dale, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. It's sure. The first time, and I've listened to you for years.
Thank you.
My pleasure. You know, you were mentioning the fact that, you know, the predators, coaches that go into gymnastics and other sports, they may be predators going in just to get closer to the kids. I heard you just a little earlier.
Yeah.
And about 17 years ago, I was a teacher, and I was accused of a crime 7 years ago that I was not even in the building to do. It was an overnighter thing that they do every year.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, it pretty much ruined my life. I was in the system. They took me out of work. I lost my job, and I was a head coach in the state of Oregon. I won't say which gym because it was a beautiful gym. But the law came in there, and they, they treated me like somebody that did something wrong, and I didn't. I think that the child that accused me of it or whatever, what they did was probably talk to some counselor later in life when they were about 18. And,
Dale, we're coming up to a break, so you got to tell me, were you ever accused of a crime?
Yes, well, I was accused of a crime, but they never arrested me for anything. What they did was took me in and made me take a...
The Lars Larson Show. Welcome to Honestly Provocative Talk. But fair warning, if you're listening to this show, you're likely on the FBI's most wanted list. Welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I've been looking forward to talking to Lee Smith, who wrote The China Matrix, the epic story of how Donald Trump shattered a deadly pact. And it seems like a perfect day to do it, because as we're talking right now, both the president and the Treasury Secretary have been saying that China is trying to hold up the rest of the world by threatening the supply of rare earths, processed rare earths. Now, America could make its own rare earths, and in fact, we do mine them here. We just don't process them here. We've become almost wholly dependent, like the rest of the world is wholly dependent on communist China. And now China has limited some of those. They put some restrictions on that. And Trump is saying, you want to do that? You can find yourself cut off from the rest of the world. So perfect day to talk to Lee Smith, author of The China Matrix. Mr. Smith, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Lars, for inviting me on today. I really appreciate it. And you're right, it is a great day to talk about what's going on with China and the Trump administration.
Well, and before we get to that, the rare earths issue and specifically, let's talk about the thesis of the China matrix that Donald Trump shattered a deadly pact. Looks like we might have lost Lee, so we're going to have to get him back on the phone. But how Donald Trump shattered that deadly pact. Best-selling author and investigative journalist Lee Smith talks about the U.S. political and corporate ties that conspired with Beijing to reshape the order of the world and at America's expense. I mean, this has not been a good thing for America, going all the way back to Henry Kissinger, when apparently Kissinger took the view that if we just invited the Chinese communists to become part of the world community, that they would straighten their act out. No, they haven't. They've become a lot richer, and they've funded a lot of their development, but they have not changed their stripes much at all. Lee, sorry, I don't know how we lost your phone call, but welcome back, and describe for my audience how Donald Trump managed to break this pact that was made between elites in America and elites in communist China.
Well, this has been going on for 50 years since Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger, opened to China in February 1972. And while this has been praised an awful lot by American policymakers and American corporate leaders, it's turned out to be a disaster for the American middle class. And other people have talked about this. Other American leaders have talked about it for a long time on the right. People like Jesse Helms, and on the left, people like Dick Gephardt, but Donald Trump is the first American president to really do anything about it.
And he faces certain headwinds when he tries to do this, doesn't he? Even today, even though he won the presidency, even though he's got the House and the Senate, he's got a lot of people working at counter purposes to him getting something done about this.
That's right. Both people on Capitol Hill, people in executive branch agencies, as well as lots of corporate leaders are very much against it. The president's done a terrific job in managing to wrangle some corporate leaders, and some corporate leaders like Jamie Dimon have come to see the light, have come to see the fact that the Chinese Communist Party poses a very serious threat to how we live as Americans. And so really, again, right now the applause goes to Donald Trump, but there's a lot of other people who have done hard work over the last 50 years, like some of the folks I've mentioned. But Donald Trump is the first president, first man to be able to be in position to do something about it.
Okay, so long term, Mr. Smith, is this going to work? Are we going to be able to get permanent changes made in the way the United States relates to China? You know, and one of the things would be H-1B visas, where China seems willing to send its own Chinese nationals over here. They go to school. They go to work for tech companies. Yeah. They steal stuff, and they take it right back to communist China. We got to cut that off, don't we?
Absolutely right. That's a big problem. And as I devote a long section in that book, The China Matrix, to the problems with Chinese graduate students. I mean, it's a threat not only to American workers, it's also a threat to our national security. As Donald Trump discovered in his first term, a lot of those Chinese graduate students are working in very sensitive research positions in the United States, including in American nuclear laboratories. So it's a very bad thing, and people should understand, as we'll find out from reading the book, the president does not like this idea. It's not something, you know, people misunderstood a couple of months ago when Donald Trump was talking about 600,000 Chinese graduate students, how that would be great with him. No, it's absolutely not. And when he said that, it was part of a negotiation tactic. So the president realizes there are very serious threats that the Chinese Communist Party poses to us all around.
Well, I wondered about that, Mr. Smith. I'm talking to Lee Smith, author of The China Matrix. Why was it that Trump had identified this and said, look, this is a problem. You can't let people come in, go to our universities, steal research material from universities, and then go back to China because they're still Chinese nationals and they owe their allegiance to Beijing. And then all of a sudden he turned, or seemed to turn, and say, yeah, we could probably let 600,000 in. And a lot of us got a big question mark above our heads, and we said, what the heck just happened? Did he change?
No, he definitely didn't change. He's realized since the first term this was a threat, and his ability to do something about it in the first term is extremely limited since he was up for re-election. And there were all sorts of threats coming from corporate interests that they were going to undermine President Trump if he did try to do anything about the student visas. But that's no longer the case for the second term. And again, during the first term, he was greatly alarmed by this. And we know that this also, I mean, the sheer number of students it overwhelms the FBI's ability to do anything about it, to keep tabs on these students. So no, I think in the long run, or rather in the short run, by the end of President Trump's term here, I think we're going to see a vast reduction in visas for Chinese students.
Well, Mr. Smith, let me ask you about this. Do the tech companies themselves realize that China is, I mean, they may see this as an attractive place to make money right now, but they're going to end up owning those American tech companies, either literally or figuratively. I mean, it's like when Boeing, you know, was told by the Chinese, if you want to sell us your jets, you'll have to make some of your jets here. And so they began making some stuff in China. And then pretty soon China says, hey, we've got our own domestic airline or airplane industry, and now we're going to start doing just what Boeing was doing. Would you think that the folks in the C-suite of these big companies would realize this is what's going to happen? We do business with them, then they want some of our business, and then they own us, and they take us out.
Well, I mean, but one of the most relevant, perhaps the most famous example is Elon Musk and Tesla. You know, he's not selling as many cars in China as he was before, and China's muscled in on the EV industry at the expense of Tesla. But one of the amazing things, again, which I document in the China Matrix, is that all of these people were warned going in. Here's what they're going to do. They're going to steal your intellectual property. They're going to force you to transfer technology. You're going to have very little access to the Chinese market, if any at all. What you'll be able to do is you can manufacture in China and send it back to the United States, but they're just going to rip you off. And it happened again and again and again, and it continues to happen. And so it's bizarre. It's not even about enlightened self-interest that, hey, look, well, yeah, it's a shame, but we'll make a lot of money, because they all wind up getting badly hurt and not making money at a certain point. Why this continues to happen, why American corporate leaders continue to fool themselves and continue to say it's about helping shareholders when in many cases it's not, is absolutely bizarre.
Well, and should we start erecting some hard barriers? Your grad students can't come here, period. If they want to come here, become citizens, and then they're not going back to China. And we're going to say that if Americans can't own land or buildings or company in China, then you can't own stuff here either. Should we erect those barriers?
Absolutely. You know, I like something that Senator Tom Cotton, who kindly endorsed my book, but Senator Cotton has said for a long time, he said, like, you know, we'd be thrilled to have Chinese students here if they wanted to study American history, American political theory, if they want to study the Constitution, if they want to study Herman Melville, that's great. But no, you don't get to come here anymore and study math and engineering and STEM subjects and transfer what you learn here back to the Chinese Communist Party. So
no, it doesn't make any sense. That's Lee Smith, the author of The China Matrix, the epic story of how Donald Trump shattered a deadly pact. Mr. Smith, thanks very much. Back in a moment. You got the Lars Larson Show.
What does Lars think about smoking the devil's lettuce?
I won't go schizo, will I?
It's a distinct possibility.
Now it's time to take a hit of Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, so make of this what you will. John Bolton, who served as National Security Advisor under President Trump in his first term in office, has now been indicted, the word comes down, for mishandling classified information. A federal grand jury indicted Bolton on charges of that mishandling of classified info. The indictment says that Bolton knowingly transmitted materials related to foreign policy while communicating with his contacts outside after leaving the White House. He is 76 years old, served as National Security Advisor from April of 2018 until he was fired in September, about a year later. So we'll get you more details as they become available. To your calls now. Let's start with Ted in Gig Harbor, listening on KVI and the Radio Northwest Network. Hey, Ted, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hello, Lars. I was a rare earths specialist for a major aerospace company starting about 2009.
Yeah.
I looked into it and got the attention of management that China was trying to cut off our rare earth supply. they threw a few bucks at us, and we put a team together and found that none of our products would fly or run without rare earths.
Yep.
And, you know, we got in management informed. And I'm retired now, but I've kept up on the subject, okay? And I took a look at how much progress the United States has made since 2009. Back then, there were zero manufacturers of neodymium iron boron magnets, neomagnets, neodymium yep. being a rare earth.
They're okay. really good magnets, and that's one of the key right. things that they've started to limit.
Right. Now there are 11 manufacturers of those in the USA, okay?
Hold on. They manufacture them here, but did they get the material they make the yeah. magnets from here or from China?
That was my next sentence, okay? We have an outfit in Mountain Pass, California called MP Materials. They mine, refine, and extract metals from rare earth ore, and in fact they have a magnet manufacturer in Texas, one of those 11. Okay, there are several other deposits that are waiting to become mines. There's one called Boken Ridge in Alaska, which has heavy rare earths. Okay, there's one in Texas called Texas Rare Earths, there are a couple of others, Bear Lodge in Wyoming. All these are waiting for money to become something other than a deposit in the ground, okay? So I would give the United States about a C. Oh, there's also a refinery in Texas that it's a joint project with the DOD and Lynas in Australia. And they are waiting for, well, they got a problem down there. They can't figure out how to deal with disposal of water, you know.
And the mill tailings and all. And see, my understanding, Ted, matches with yours. I mean, MP Materials there, we've interviewed people on this show who are running mining operations in places like Wyoming where they get the raw materials. The problem is not the magnets, but some of the other rare earths, whether it's germanium or some of the other ones that go into chips, they end up processing it in China. And there's only one other country that does a lot of it is Brazil, right?
Yeah. Yep. So we've made some progress, but we got a long way to go. And we need to build on the progress we've made, and we can't be bullied by China. What do we have that China has almost zero of? Fossil fuels.
Yep.
We ought to use that as something
else, though, Ted, that I think is the biggest cudgel that has an immediate effect. America is the single most attractive market to sell stuff in the whole world.
There you go.
I mean, and so you say, do you want access to sell things to Americans? Well, China has that right now, because if you walk into any Walmart, any Target store, almost any store, almost everything in there is made in China or somewhere else. Walmart likes to brag that half of their stuff is made in America. That means the other half is made in China. So if you tell China, if you want to be able to sell stuff to Americans, who are the biggest, most attractive single group of consumers and affluent consumers in the world, I mean, we don't think of ourselves as rich. But compared to the rest of the world, the average American making minimum wage full time is richer than a whole bunch of people on this planet.
Oh, yeah.
So they have the ability to buy those things.
Yeah, yeah. And thank God we have a president that stands up to these people in China. And, there's big No Kings rallies coming up, right?
Oh, my God. And do you know who's by the way, Ted, do you know who's funding the No Kings rallies?
George Soros.
Well, no, not Soros so much. The Chinese Communist Party is doing it. And Andy Ngo and the folks at the Post-Millennial have done some great reporting on this, because what they do is they funnel money in. And China also gives a lot of money to environmental groups in the United States. Yeah. So when you see an environmental group saying, oh, we can't use fossil fuels, we can't use coal, we can't use natural gas, we can't use propane, we can't use oil, the folks who are funding that line of reasoning, you say, well, that's the Sierra Club, or it's this group or that group. Except who's giving them the money? The Chinese Communist Party is doing that. And why would they do that? Because the more they knock out fossil fuels, the more solar panels are sold. And 80% of the solar panels on planet Earth are made where, Ted?
Yep, China.
China. And you No, and we need to develop our own local industry. But as I understand it, other than the magnets, the biggest problem is we can get it out of the ground, turning it into the product or the material that actually is used in those chips. That becomes the tough nut to crack. And as I understand, the reason China can do it, they're willing to basically sacrifice chunks of their country and simply contaminate them to process all those rare earths. And we've got to figure out a way to do it clean, or in a way in which we can clean up the mess. Otherwise, China is going to own us.
The Lars Larson.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one fat-ass president. He secured the border at the level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Now, imagine this. You've got a governor in the state of Oregon, Tina Kotek, who said that her focus was going to be on housing and getting more housing in a state that is critically short of it, just like Washington State is critically short. Frankly, there's a shortage of housing across the United States of America that's about 4 million. So there are places where housing is being built, and there are places where it's not being built, and Oregon and Washington are among those places where it's not being built. And yet, even though she's getting plaudits from the likes of the editorial board of the Bend Bulletin, Governor Kotek, they say, is making progress. Housing has been Kotek's focus since day one of her administration. Frankly, I don't see it. So I wanted to test that notion on Representative Christine Drazen, a Republican, not a member of the governor's party, but the governor won't come on the show. Representative Drazen, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me, Lars. Good to be here today.
So tell me this. When the Bend Bulletin sings the praises of Tina Kotek and says this has been her number one focus, can you see any evidence that it's actually doing any good?
I actually thought this is her number one focus, and this is what she's achieved. That is the ultimate definition of a failed leader. She has said, hey, folks, I see this problem. I'm gonna give this all of my energy. She's barely talked about anything else but housing. That's resulted in some of the lowest housing permits being pulled this year than in the last 20 years. We're at 11,000 permits. We're on track for about 11,000 permits this year. And her goal was 36,000. This is literally, in her own words, the best she can do. And she's not achieving her own stated goals, and she's certainly failing on this issue. When I read the Bend Bulletin editorial, I just laughed out loud. I mean, there is nothing that is more ridiculous than seeing an op-ed, you know, in a local paper act like Tina's achievements and progress on this are worth celebrating.
Well, and what seems strange, to correct me if I'm wrong, when she came in, the state was producing not quite 20,000 housing starts a year. It might have been 18 or 19,000. And it basically dropped in half, as you said. 11,000 is what we're on track for right now. So where she promised, I'll take it from 18 to almost double that, you know, 35 or 40,000 housing starts, instead it dropped in half. I don't know how anybody, whether it's the Oregonian Daily Dead Fish Wrapper or the Bend Bulletin or any of the rest, could be singing her praises, because she's gone backwards. And then they give a lot of focus to homelessness, saying, well, we've managed to rehouse 5,500 households, except the number of homeless does not appear to have changed in the biggest cities in the state. Or and if you're, unless you got different numbers than I do, the number of homeless on the streets appears to be the same. So I'm not sure how they're even, you know, coming up with this number that the governor has somehow managed to rehouse 5,500 people or households. I don't see any evidence of it. Do you?
No, I don't see any evidence of it either, Lars. And I think if people in, you know, I don't know how many people are familiar with the city of Roseburg, but the homelessness on our streets has been persistently right around the number of people that is the population of the city of Roseburg. So when you tell me that you're giving somebody someplace to be during the day or maybe a night shelter for a couple thousand people, and you still aren't addressing what is, in fact, the real problem, which is addiction. If you don't acknowledge that the real problem with homelessness is that the state doesn't want to get people sober, then you're never going to fix this problem. And it's just funny math. It's just there's no way that math adds up. The people across our state are not feeling the improvements and the progress, and certainly they're not in Bend. I mean, they've got real problems out in their federal forests out there for homeless populations living out in that community. So I was surprised to see the Ben Bulletin jump on board with this propaganda from the governor's office, because the facts just don't bear it out. And the reason her housing starts are nowhere near what they should be is the first thing that she has done, and the same thing that she's done every day since, has been to raise taxes and add regulations. And yep. She hasn't put two and two together to understand that that is exactly how you go the opposite direction when you want the private economy to function and grow and be robust and vital across our state. She hasn't made the connection. She believes that you can just create a goal out of thin air, and then you can just tax your way to achieving it, or you can just spend government money to get that done. That's not reality. That's not how things work. And the reason that we've gone backwards is entirely on her shoulders, whether that was when she was Speaker of the House and she was mandating and dictating all kinds of statewide rent control, or the new taxes and the cat tax and everything else, or since she's been governor, when she's been living in fantasy land, thinking that when housing is going the opposite direction, that's the moment she should send out a press release saying how much good work she's doing on behalf of Oregonians.
Well, and these new regulations, when you tell the folks, long ago I owned a little duplex, so I had just a taste of what it was like to be a landlord, and that was a long time ago. But these days, when you tell the landlords, you can't raise the rents to match the marketplace, you can't kick out problem tenants, which means they're going to become a problem for your other tenants, and that's going to be tough. And you put all these limitations on, I don't know why anybody would want to own a rental property. And so put those regulations on and then say, but we're going to get more people to build more housing that they're going to rent out to people in Oregon under that set of rules. It seems highly unlikely.
Yeah, and it has played out. Not only is it highly unlikely, it's just not happening, because people know how to, balance their books, and they recognize that if they're going into business, that the whole point of that is that they make a little bit of profit. And when you take a look at the business environment in Oregon right now, you know how tough that is. And I talk to businesses all the time that tell me that they are going to make investments in other places. Portland, just look at Portland, just Portland. There was a recent study that came out that said if you take a look at 81 kind of urban areas across the nation, that Oregon is 80th in attractiveness for investment.
Yep.
And when people are purchasing buildings and when they are building, they are looking to try to make it pencil for their businesses. And all the studies and all the data show that it's not attractive in Oregon right now, and it's not attractive in Portland. And you've got to lay that at the feet of Tina Kotek, because like the Ben Bulletin said, this was her number one issue. This is the number one thing she cares about. She just does not know how to get this done.
No, and in fact, she does know how to raise taxes. And the other thing is, they bought into this phony number. She prevented 25,000 from losing their homes. Yeah, that's like elephant repellent to me. You're saying, what do you mean? They did lose? Oh, no, I spray it in the studio every week, and I never have any elephants here. So you say, what does it mean when you prevented somebody from losing their home? Well, they were going to lose their home. Well, they didn't. Oh, that's only because we helped them. You mean they wouldn't have figured something else out? It wouldn't have been, well, we're going to get a second job, or we're going to do this, or bring on a roommate. I mean, would they have figured it out? No, Tina Kotek would have you believe that if it weren't for her, there'd be 25,000 people additional homeless on the street. So, Christine, one last thing. I got 30 seconds. The governor will not sign this tax bill, so it can then be referred to the voters. What should we make of that?
We all know that she is, in fact, on the ballot with that tax measure, because it's her idea, it's her bill. She doesn't want to sign it because she knows that voters are going to absolutely send it to the people, and they will vote it down. And that's a referendum on her leadership. So she's dragging her feet so that they don't have the chance. She is
obviously a major champion of democracy, that Tina Kotek. Boy, she believes in democracy. She just doesn't believe in letting people vote. That's Christine Drazen, representative with us from Canby. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Hey.
Facebook, X, and Google may censor you, but you'll never find censorship here.
Don't censor me!
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. And, of course, naysayers always go to the head of the line. I love a good naysayer, especially if they come prepared with some kind of sensible argument. And by sensible, I don't have to agree with an argument to think, boy, that guy really, I mean, he's wrong, but he really made that argument well. Except most of the time, naysayers will come in with an argument that is not all that well thought out. But having said that, 866-439-5277. President Trump is planning to use the IRS, routinely the most hated federal agency in America, to dismantle left-wing funding networks of violence and Antifa. Is that law enforcement or is it politics? And really, does it matter? If you've got people out there who are using their billions, and George Soros is one of them, to go out and fund efforts to undercut America, to create chaos, to fund organizations like Black Lives Matter and Antifa, the terrorist organization, I want to see these people cut off at the knees, metaphorically, of course. But the Trump administration wants a major overhaul of the IRS that'll make it much easier to investigate left-leaning groups and major Democrat donors. Now, you'd say, well, that's not right. They shouldn't be doing that kind of thing. Well, why not? If you're going after these groups because they're doing something wrong, then you're going to use the legal mechanisms you have available to them. And if you said to me, but Lars, what they're doing is completely legal and it's just ordinary free speech, well, then they won't mind being investigated. For example, I do a radio show every day. I talk about the things I believe in. Nobody tells me what to believe. So if you came and investigated me and said, why, Lars, you're doing a radio show and you're supported by advertising. Yes, I am. And you do all the ideas that the advertisers tell you to do. Nope, never have, never will. Go ahead, investigate me all day long and twice on Sunday. It won't be a problem. Now, consider this. Advisor Gary Shapley, who is a longtime IRS agent, is leading efforts to install allies in the IRS Criminal Investigative Division. This is from the Wall Street Journal. And limit the involvement of IRS lawyers in sensitive cases. It comes as Donald Trump directs the Treasury Department to identify the financial networks that he claims are funding political violence in Democrat-led cities. And if you wonder, well, what political violence? I can tell you, take a look at any city where there have been anti-ICE, pro-Antifa protests, and then ask yourself, how in the world did they get such a well-organized investigation? For example, the Post-Millennial, which Andy Ngo, who's a great journalist, he was on this show a decade ago, back when he was a grad student, and now he's one of the top conservative journalists out there. And what a fun thing that is, that Andy Ngo, who's a gay person of color, and a foreign, you know, an American citizen, but a gay person of color, it drives the liberals nuts that he actually writes sensible conservative pieces. He's identified that Antifa is so well organized that they literally rent storage spaces so they can store all the gear that they haul out every night, whether it's gas masks or other paraphernalia that they use to launch these attacks on ICE and other parts of law enforcement. Well, the Treasury Department is now identifying the financial networks behind that. Now, if the people who are backing these efforts financially, if they mind being identified as the backers, well, then there must be something wrong with that. Because most of us, if you said, Lars, do you occasionally, you and Tina occasionally give donations to political organizations? Yeah. I mean, we're not Soros for sure. So that means we're not giving a lot. But yeah, I'm proud to do that. If I'm not proud of supporting something, I don't support it. The critics say the move could lead to politically motivated probes, while the administration frames it as tracking illicit funding streams, likening it to the post-9/11 terrorism financing investigation. The plan follows a history of Trump targeting nonprofits and liberal donors. And why would he do that? I can tell you why he do that. Because prior to the 2012 election, so just a dozen years ago, you had Barack Hussein Obama, who told the IRS, shut down those conservative groups that are engaging in free speech. don't give them 501c3 status, which you have to operate as a nonprofit, but instead grant that status to all the liberal groups out there. As far as I'm concerned, if Trump has the IRS do investigations of all these, you know, billionaires like Soros or the Tides Foundation, and that they're funding things, if they're proud of what they're funding, they won't mind being exposed to the public. If they're ashamed of what they're funding or they want to conceal it, there is a reason they want to conceal it, because they know that they're up to no good. Why in the world would anybody finance the efforts of people to go out and stop ICE from arresting illegal aliens and actually enforcing federal law? There is no good reason for that, unless you want chaos in American cities. So that Wall Street Journal says that's what they're doing. They're going to use the IRS. They're going to go after these nonprofits and other funders of that, and they're going to find out who's paying the money and what is exactly happening. Now, Shapley and one of the Treasury Department spokespeople would not tell the Wall Street Journal exactly what they're doing, but they're changing the IRS. Now, if the IRS acts within the laws because Congress hasn't changed any of those laws, then there's nothing wrong with it. Trump has said on Truth Social that Soros and his son Alex Soros should face federal charges under the RICO Act and ought to be in jail. I could see the argument for that. You go out and you fund people to go out and create chaos in American cities to block the efforts of ICE to enforce the law. That is one of their latest causes. Well, is that illegal? Yeah. And if you're funding it, then you're implicated in. The left would like you to believe that all those Antifa out in the streets are just a bunch of young men and women who are politically engaged and they're doing it of their own accord. They don't want anybody to know that an awful lot of it is paid for by these NGOs. And I'll tell you the more serious implication, not just that George Soros might be funding it, but that some of it is being funded with your tax dollars. Now, just this week, they made a tremendous deal about the fact that the Secretary of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem, had put together a video, and they were showing it at different American airports, saying this airport is largely, you know, that we're having shortage of TSA and air traffic controllers because the government shut down, bring the government shutdown to an end. And they said, well, that's a violation of the Hatch Act. What happens if we find out from the IRS that many of those NGOs are actually being funded out of taxpayer dollars? In other words, they're using taxpayer dollars to fund political activities on behalf of the left in American cities that has created chaos. It's sent people to the hospital. It's led to attacks, literal attacks, and potentially deadly attacks on ICE, like illegal aliens shining lasers at ICE and CBP helicopters flying overhead. That kind of activity, if that's being funded with taxpayer dollars, that is more than a violation of the Hatch Act. It's actually putting people's lives at risk. Now, for months, they've been trying to find a way to work within the rules they've already got to revoke the tax-exempt status of organizations that are acting contrary to the good of the American public. I'm going to tell you something. While I disagree with Donald Trump from time to time, for the vast most part, Donald Trump is acting in the best interest of the American public. He wants to enforce the law. And the left and Americans who are Democrats, they don't want the laws enforced because breaking the law benefits their side of the political aisle. Glad to get your calls at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com.
The Lars Larson Show. Portland's. The risks and rewards of remote work.
Where are you now?
I'm sitting in my office.
I doubt that.
Why would you doubt that?
If you were in your office right now, we'd be having this conversation face to face.
At least woke progressives won't stop you from listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. I guarantee you I will not be going down to take part or even observe the so-called No Kings protest, because they're all over this weekend, and I'm not going to go anywhere near there. Bunch of left-wingers who are going to swing into the downtowns of many major American cities and say that we're going to protest the Trump administration under the banner of No Kings. Well, there's something you should know about the organizations that are backing that, and Steve Malloy is just the guy to ask about it. Steve, welcome back.
Hey, Lars, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Glad to do it. Steve is a senior fellow at the Energy and Environment Legal Institute and the former Donald Trump EPA transition team member that we talk to so often about energy. But in this case, I want to talk to you about who's put up the money to make this happen. Millions of activists in major American cities under the banner of No Kings. We know who's giving them the money, don't we?
Well, you know, there are a lot of, I guess the way to summarize is just dark money. There's a lot of dark money donors, you know, George Soros, guys like that. But also, I think there might be some Chinese money in this. You know, there's a lot of, especially when it comes to climate, Congress is looking into whether the Chinese have hired U.S. environmental groups to, you know, basically wreck our economy. That's not new. And I wouldn't be surprised to find lots of Chinese money in this all this Andy Trump stuff.
Well, and ordinarily, I think people might say, well, who cares who's backing it? It's the cause itself. And we can get to that in a moment. But let me ask you this. Would you think that reporters should point out to people the protests are being funded? If they're being funded by the Chinese Communist Party, they've got a dog in the fight when it comes to energy and when it comes to the things that Donald Trump is shutting down, the Green New Deal nonsense, yeah. The billions of dollars being spent on wind and solar, because that's where wind and solar comes from, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. There's not a solar panel in this country that doesn't come from communist China. All the components necessary for wind turbines, communist China. You can't build an EV or drive an EV without communist China. That is a big, you know, big revenue producer for them. Trump has canceled the Green New Scam. There were hundreds of billions of dollars going to communist China. So, you know, they have lots at stake here. Not only the financial stuff, but, you know, they like the sabotage that the Green Movement is all about. And they just like the chaos they cause by funding these left-wing groups.
Well, but ordinarily, Steve, I mean, even the liberal reporters that populate most newsrooms like to point out conflicts of interest. They'll say, well, you know, so-and-so is in favor of this, but so-and-so is with this big company and they make a lot of money. This is where They've got an entire country that is helping to fund the so-called protests. And you say, well, do they have anything to gain by pushing these protests? Yeah. If they push against fossil fuel, nuclear energy, anything involving natural gas or coal or anything like that, yeah, China is standing to benefit because the more money that is spent on solar panels and wind by the American taxpayers through these subsidies, the more money goes to communist China. Meanwhile, they're building coal-fired and nuclear power plants to beat the ban.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, this is not about... There's no part of this that's about the environment when it comes to these green groups or communist China. Communist China, as President Trump, I think, pointed out at the UN, you know, communist China is trying to capture the Western energy systems, and they're doing it with slave labor made like solar panels and wind turbine parts and EVs. They're trying to destroy, you know, our car industry with their own EVs, selling them at cut rates. And, you know, they want to get us hooked on Chinese stuff because, well, why go to war over Taiwan when you can just strangle our economy by making us buy everything from China? And if we don't get it from China, we can't get it from anyplace else.
Well, and the other thing about this, Steve, is when they bill it as No Kings, I mean, you translate that any way you want. I look at it and I say, well, why would you see Donald Trump acting like a king? And they say, well, you know, he's acting like a dictator. I said, have you seen him be constrained by the courts? He has been. Have you seen him run up against laws that he'd like to have on the books, but Congress has not put them there, so he acts within the laws that are already available? Do you think that if any of those reporters walked up to these protesters who are, you know, protesting No Kings and say, has Donald Trump done one thing in acting like a king? From my view, and I know I'm a Trump partisan, but it looks as though he said, I'll take the rules that are already on the books, I'll take the resources that are already available to me, and I'll simply enforce the rules and the laws, and I will get the result that Americans want, that are the reason that Americans voted for him. But do you think they can point to any single thing where Trump has acted like a king and simply said, make this happen because I said so?
No, you know, a lot of the outrage, I guess, is because is over ICE deporting people who are here illegally.
Well, but how is that acting like a king saying, hey, Joe didn't enforce any of these laws, I'm going to enforce that? Well, that's acting like a king to insist on enforcement of laws.
Right, so that's kind of the irony. You know, Biden acted like a king and just opened our borders and said, you know, everybody come here, and they did. Now Trump has closed the borders, and he's trying to get rid of the people that came here. I don't have a problem with it. I don't know why. I'm not quite sure why anybody does. You can't have a country with open borders.
No, and in fact, if anything, I think there's the case be made that Joe Biden behaved like a king because he said, I want to forgive all those loans that people took out to get a worthless degree in beetle tracking or button sorting or whatever they got the degree in that wasn't worth enough in a job to be able to pay the money back. Well, there's no law that lets you do that, Mr. President. Well, then I'll just do it without a law. And he was shut down by the courts. And there were multiple examples, as you said. There was no law that said we're going to have a wide open southern border and 10 million people plus invade the country illegally. But Biden did it anyway. If anything, I think the case could be made that Biden acted like a king and now Trump is trying to clean up the mess.
Well, then, you know, with the student loan example you brought up, Supreme Court shut Biden down and then Biden just went back at it, reformulated and went right back at forgiving student loans. He was the king. Of course, you know, this is all projection. They are projecting what they want to do. You know, they're the ones that are for totalitarianism. Now, you know, Trump is being more aggressive than your average Republican president, and that's
Thank God.
Because most Republican presidents, as you know, have just sort of rolled over. You know, even Ronald Reagan, I don't think really saw what was going on within the bureaucracy of the federal government, how left moving it was, you know, and George Bush, forget it. But Donald Trump came in, you know, the first term was a little rough. He was getting used to it. But, you know, between the first term, what happened to him during the Biden years, he is implementing what he has learned. And, you know, I am all for it.
Well, and one of the things I thought that Americans would be frustrated by, and you just kind of glanced across it, Steve, but if you have to pay money to the government, and nobody likes paying taxes, but we understand you got to run a government, and then the government agencies say, we're going to take these taxes and spend them the way the people's representatives on Capitol Hill and the president say. And then the bureaucracy says, no, we're not. We're not going to do what the Congress or what the president tell us to do. I would think that Americans would say, hold on a second. You don't run the place. You work here. We told you who we want as president. We told you who we want on Capitol Hill. You will do the job. And the bureaucrats say, no, we're unfireable. We get paid well. Occasionally the government shuts down, and that's sometimes a problem. But we're not going to do what you're telling us to do, or what the law tells us to do, or what the Congress tells us to do, or what the president tells us to do. We are bureaucrats. If anything, I'd say the bureaucrats act like kings as well. That's Steve Milloy, former member of the Trump EPA transition team, now a senior fellow at the Energy and Environment Legal Institute. I'll get to your phone calls and emails. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Experiencing technical difficulties?
That electrician must be a Democrat.
No technical difficulties here. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I do have to mention this before I go to calls. The Seattle Public School Board, these folks aren't any smarter than the Portland Public School Board. They just voted 5-2 against reinstating police officers at Garfield High School. And all they were proposing was a one-year pilot program. Now, you might remember about 5 years ago, in the wake of the George Floyd riots, you know, where the mob in the street was being listened to by the folks in city councils, both in Minneapolis, Portland, Seattle, other places like that. They got rid of their school engagement officer. That's what they would have called a cop in the classroom or the police resource officer. They got rid of the whole program. And then they started having a lot of violence that happened on the high school campus, including the shooting and murder of a 17-year-old student last year. And so they said, well, we'll consider bringing the cops back as a one-year pilot program. And now they voted 5-2 against doing that. It is so colossally stupid, you almost can't imagine it. To your calls now. Let's go to Kent in Washougal. Hey, Kent, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Lars, I just wanted to give you a quick thing I've been thinking about. One is the Saul Alinsky 1904, the Rules for Radicals.
Yeah.
And the other one is the 1982-84 manifesto. I was just giving myself to the Lord, and I got exposed to the manifesto of the gay and lesbian movement, which now is, you know, left-wing then, but now it's, so this is 40 years later.
And okay,
so
and I have no idea where you're going, Ken. Can you tell the audience where you're going with all this?
Well, they need to read the Gay and Lesbian Manifesto. It's on the web. You can just look up the 1983, and they'll tell you.
I'll assign that as homework very soon, and I appreciate your call. Let's go to Dan. Hey, Dan, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. You know, 2 points in keeping with your Conspiracy Theory Thursday.
Yeah.
I'd like to postulate that Antifa is the new brown shirts of the late 20s in Germany.
Yep.
Left to their own resources, they will become the new Nazis. They were black already. The second point is that I think it is possible to weed out potential predatory sex offenders away from children.
All how do you do
it's
that?
It's not going to happen anytime soon. We're going to need to have testing. It's a matter of there's a number of polygraph tests. And right now, nobody's going to go for it. It's DFO is going to get involved.
We had started talking about this just so people know, because within the last 2 months, there was a youth coach who was found to be a registered sex offender. And the question immediately was, how in the world did that guy get past the background check? And the answer was, they weren't doing background checks. But I'm curious, how you would root out sex offenders by giving them a polygraph test in which you talk to them about whether or not they're sexually attracted to children or what?
Yes. Ultimately, there's tests. Where's a person looking when they see an image on a screen? That technology is already, well established.
But hold on. Does that mean that everybody, and let's assume that most of the people who want to become a youth coach, I would like to weed out the people. And let's start with weeding out the people who are already registered sex offenders who've been committed of a crime. But you're talking about doing specialized testing of anybody who wants to be a youth sports coach and doing some kind of testing that would show whether or not they're a pervert or not?
Yes. And it doesn't have to be made public, but it certainly, and it's not a guarantee. But there's no 100% guarantee that you're going to catch everybody.
But do you think that the average person? Do you think that the let's take? We know there are people who are groomers who seek to become youth coaches to get access to kids. I want to get rid of them. But you're saying that you're going to do this kind of testing on everybody else, including the people who've never done anything evil to a child, and you're going to say, we're going to have this specialized testing, like plethysmograph testing, if you know what that is, and you're going to do that to every man or woman who wants to become a youth coach? You're not going to have any youth coaches, are you?
Perhaps not that invasive as a plethysmograph, but certainly from my CB.
But do you think the average person is not guilty of
exposure to a child and work one on one with them?
Okay, but Dan, do you think the average person who's never done anything evil to a child and never would is going to submit to that kind of testing?
If they're clean, I think they will. And if they really want to work with children, and
I mean, you know how a plethysmograph works?
Pardon?
Do you know how a plethysmograph works?
I've heard about
they attach a device to your private parts and then show you pictures that a pedophile would like and see whether or not you react. You really think the average person who's never committed a crime, never done anything evil to a kid, who says, I'd like to go coach basketball or football or soccer, or swimming or whatever, is going to consent to that kind of testing. And they're going to say, I have no interest in being a coach then, aren't they?
Well, no, sir. It doesn't have to be that invasive. There's a simple eye test for a polygraph to determine, you know, what is a person really thinking about? And it does, you know, it's, and also to where is the person looking when they...
I'll tell you what, I'll see if we can get an expert on that, an eye test or a lie detector test or a plethysmograph. I don't think most people are going to consent to that kind of stuff. And if you tell them it's going to stay private, good luck with that. You've got the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest.
The Lars Larson Show.